visiting with Sam Knox of the IHSA. There wasn't a high school football game this week, but I know a lot of attention, of course, the actual games end the week of Thanksgiving, and eight state champions are crowned and some great games again this year. But the big story this week, the IHSA bylaw amendment proposals, the voting results were announced, and the repeal of district scheduling wins by a vote total of 374 to 241. So let's get back in the time machine. We go back to last year. District scheduling was approved for the 2021 season, and then an effort put on the ballot this year to repeal that, and that wins, so no district scheduling. Now, I guess I'm going to ask you the first question I have. It actually came from a listener of ours earlier this week, Sam Knox, who's the football administrator with the IHSA, is how can it happen that districts didn't even occur and they were already repealed? So can you kind of answer that question?
Yeah, Jim, thanks for having me this morning. It's IHSA democracy. I think that's a good answer to that, because our bylaws have always been written by our member school principals and athletic directors, and they can be adjusted, changed every year if somebody writes a proposal and it's approved by the membership. So it's our democracy, and schools vote on that. So it does seem unique, no doubt about it, that it was voted in last year by a slim margin, 17 votes. People didn't even really take it for a test drive or even see what it's going to be like, and then a year later it's repealed by significant votes the other way. So it's been a roller coaster of a year. We've talked about it a lot, and I guess at this point we continue living IHSA football life as we've known it for many years.
Yeah, I know it is interesting as you bring that up, because of the critics that I have talked to of being against district scheduling, you know, they had said, not all of them, but I've heard the comment, oh, the IHSA is going to make it happen. So this district is going to occur. But, you know, the proof is in the pudding. And as you just mentioned, well, it's up to the IHSA member schools. It's not up to Sam Knox.
It's certainly not. And no doubt about it, we planned for it. We came up with what we called rough drafts of what districts might look like. I put together some sample schedules of who might play who and when the non-district games might be, if you were an 8-team district or a 9-team district. And I had all that planned out and ready to go. We were just waiting until, you know, the fall of 21 to roll it out. But you know, enough talk amongst the membership, and I really think that once we put out the rough drafts of who might be grouped with who, that convinced some people either, A, yes, this is a good idea, we really like this, we like our grouping of schools, or B, we really don't like our grouping of schools, let's really reconsider this. So it's a divisive topic, and I don't mean divisive in a negative way. It's like many topics around the country right now. There's a lot of people that support it one way and a lot of people that support it the other way. And so the membership has spoken, and we'll move on from here.
Yeah, and apparently then by the results, in my opinion, is a majority of the member schools probably didn't like their groupings. Now, I was receptive to district scheduling just because of the immediate area I'm from and the conference kind of shuffling impact, zero stability in a lot of this stuff. But the one thing I did like about district scheduling that came into play, sure, I could say, well, I don't like the way this district looks, you know, and I think many of, this is Jim Taylor's opinion, that many of the member schools, they saw the mock, you know, I use the, you know, quotations, mock districts, mm-hmm. and they didn't like it, and oh gosh, we're not going to support that. But it's a process where you evaluate it every 2 years, and you have the opportunity to change the districts, because we know enrollment classifications are going to fluctuate in many parts of the state. So that is the one thing that I really liked about districts, is you look at it every 2 years. And the other thing is, again, you go into the season knowing the enrollment classification and what class you're in the high school football playoffs.
Yeah, it's funny. I was at the National Athletic Directors Conference recently and caught a car back to the airport with an athletic director from Indiana. And on the 15-minute ride, we talked about a lot of things, but football mainly, and how do you do it in Indiana and how you do it in Illinois. And I said, in Indiana, do your schools know what class they're in at the beginning of the season? And he said, well, sure. I said, in Illinois, they don't. And he gave me the most quizzical look you've ever seen. What do you mean they don't know what class they're in at the beginning of the season? I said, well, most of them do. They know they're 1A, 2A, but there's schools that, you know, surprise on that last Saturday of the season when we set up the brackets, oh, we thought we were going to be the largest school in 3A, and now we're the smallest school in 4A. So he was surprised to hear that we set up our system like that.
Well, and then I was involved in a conversation with one of the coaches. Well, we talked to Bill Lapp, who was one of the high school principals that submitted the bylaw proposals to repeal the districts. And I think was it Brian Quam from El Paso Gridley, the principal that submitted the proposal. And then I talked to Pat Lohr, a coach of Fulton, who was kind of receptive and said, hey, let's let this district scheduling play out. And we had a conversation about why can't the IHSA mandate that some of these conferences pick up the schools that don't have conferences, where if a school comes calling, basically you got to look at adding them to your league. You know, there's the examples here in Western Illinois where basically there's several schools that are always on the outside looking in. Nobody will take them. And why can't the IHSA mandate that conferences pick up those schools? And his response to that was, well, basically, Jim, that's kind of like district scheduling if the IHSA gets involved in that. So the kind of question begs is, can the IHSA ever require a mandate that some of these conferences have to pick up these schools who legitimately, with good intentions, want to find a conference to play in and not have to play, what West Hancock, for example, had to play 6 or 7 games in Missouri. And one time they were contemplating seeking admission to the Missouri High School Association so they could play maybe in that state tournament series. So what about that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And the quick answer is I don't think the IHSA office would ever get involved in conference membership or mandating a conference has to accept a certain team. But looking at geography and enrollment, which is the two factors that football districts were going to be based upon, geography and enrollment, it really doesn't make a lot of sense in some areas of the state where certain schools aren't a member of a local conference, of schools that are very similar to them in enrollment. And you know, the thing about administrations at schools is that we have new principals, new athletic directors, new superintendents all the time. There's a lot of turnover in those roles. I don't know why certain schools are continuing to be left out in the cold, so to speak, without a conference home for their football team or for some of their other teams. And it's, like you said, it's forcing some schools to really have to travel much, much farther than they ever would if they were in a conference or if the districts would have held and we would have had that format. Their travel would have really decreased. And the West Hancock example you gave is very similar to the Mount Carmel, Illinois, not Chicago Mount Carmel, but Mount Carmel, Illinois, down in southeastern corner of the state, right on the border of Indiana. They were good in football for many, many years. I don't know the whole history, but they are a member of an Indiana-based conference in football just so they can fill their football schedule with 9 games.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I know that whatever system you look at with the sport of high school football is not perfect. I get that, whatever the system is. And when I called you this morning to set up the interview, I said, well, what's next? You know, so the district repeal, district scheduling repeal vote is approved by member schools. So basically what next is we move ahead like what we're doing now, right?
We do. Yeah, there's no other option. We just keep plowing ahead with what we have. And now the unique thing that's popping up, and, you know, it's not even been 24 hours yet since the vote totals were announced, some schools are contacting us with these questions of, well, we had planned on the districts happening in 21, and we've already signed contracts with opponents for 21 for some non-district games. Now what do we do? With those games we've already signed up to play 2 years from now, Are those contracts still valid? Do we need to find a suitable replacement? What if we're still in a conference and we have a conference game that weekend? So it's created some unique schedule situations that we'll have to work through with our member schools. But you hit the nail on the head. And I've talked to 1A schools all the way through 8A schools, and everybody agrees there's no perfect system, sadly. We wish there was, and if there was a perfect system, we'd probably be using it right now. But what works for some schools, and I had this feedback when the districts was approved last year, some schools contacted me right away, and they were, yes, we've been waiting for this for a long time. This is going to solve our scheduling problem. We are so happy. And I had the other end of the spectrum. This is a bad idea. Let's not do this. Let's repeal this right away. We don't want to do this. And I think we still have both ends of the spectrum and a lot of people somewhere in the middle who've said, yeah, I can see the benefits of districts, but I can see the benefits of doing it this way. I'm indifferent. We can live with whatever. So if you know the perfect system, Jim, you draw it up on paper and send it to us so we can share it with our membership. Because I think until we get to that, we'll just keep doing what we're doing and continuing to see conference changes and realignments and confusion on who's in what conference, and sometimes it makes my head spin on who's a member of what conference because it changes quite a bit.
Well, and the other thing is, I'm about whatever the system is, if local schools of similar enrollment can play one another, and I'm talking about, you know, those districts that abut one another, one may be 450, the other may be 350, whatever, but those type of schools should always play one another, and we're just losing something when they don't. I mean, that's just bottom line. And I get football is so much different than all the other sports. And, you know, the other aggravating thing for me, you brought up a point about, you know, not understanding what conference, you know, not understanding what conference you're in or the fan base, not understanding that. And I think if you want to bring, I talk about, you know, generations, it's the current generation. Yeah, those parents and their kids are going to go to the games. But maybe that generation before or two generations before, they don't get why you're not playing that local school. They're not going to probably go to the game. And then you have those situations where, okay, this team's in the conference for football, but they're, no, wait a minute, why don't we play them in the other sports? They're not in the So that's the other, like, aggravating thing for me, too, that gets lost in all this. And the interesting thing about the district thing for me was when it was initially proposed, you know, if we back up, remember where it came from. It came from the Football Advisory Committee.
That's like a cross-section
of all these coaches from around the state, right, from different geographic areas of the state. And then lo and behold, it's actually public and private school coaches, too, on that thing. And they move it forward. And, I mean, you looked at the pictures at that year of the IHSC Football Advisory Committee. I'm like, well, this is kind of a well-thought-out thing that they think this is good for the future of the game. But then, you know, as I said, to me, the mock districts was the thing. When people saw those, that's when you saw the reaction of we cannot let this happen. And I think that's what really happened. People saw the mock districts and they saw those, and the majority of the schools out there said, nope, we don't want that. And long story short, as you mentioned, that's how IHSA democracy works, I guess.
It does. And you're right about the Football Advisory Committee, because we've had football proposals almost every year for the last, I don't know, dozen or more years. And almost every year people say, well, what does the Football Advisory Committee think about this proposal? Well, the timeline didn't add up, because we were talking about proposals in the month of November at town hall meetings around the state, et cetera. But the Football Advisory Committee didn't meet until early December, until the football season was complete. So a couple years ago, we had a second meeting of the Football Advisory Committee because we knew this was a hot topic. And they came in, I believe it was maybe March or April, and we had a second meeting and said, all right, this is a hot topic. Is this something that the Football Advisory Committee supports? And ultimately, the group said, yes, let's write this up. Let's make a formal proposal. So that way, when we're talking about it at town hall meetings in the fall, and people say, what does the Football Advisory Committee think about this? We can say, well, they're the folks who support it. Now, we have members on the committee who maybe didn't wholeheartedly support it, or maybe some of them didn't support it at all, but enough of the membership said, let's put this out as a formal proposal and let people know that the Football Advisory Committee supports this. So anyway, in the end, at the IHSA office, it doesn't matter to us. We'll do what the membership wants to do. And as you said earlier, some people think, the IHSA is going to make this happen. No, we're not. We don't even get a vote in the whole process. It's our principals and athletic directors around the state who vote on that, and we, whether it's the baseball softball season or whether it's a wrestling issue or whether it's a transfer eligibility bylaw, we will make sure schools follow that according to our handbook. And we no longer have football districts in the handbook, and we'll plow ahead with what we've known for several years, and we'll probably continue to see conference changes and realignments. And I would bet you within the next couple years at least, some other group will come up with another football proposal to send through the town meetings and see if we can find a better way to do it.
And that's what's great about the bylaw amendment process. You know, it originates from the member schools. But, you know, you talk about like the IHSA. It's funny. It must have been a month ago or a couple months ago. And I was talking to somebody who was anti-districts, and they're like, well, I know that Hickman's going to make it happen. And I'm like, well, he's like been retired for several years. But whatever, next time I see Marty Hickman, I'm going to say, man, you wanted those districts. Some guy told me you were going to make it happen in 2 years or 3 years after you were retired. I don't know if you wanted to add anything, that got lost in the football district repeal got a lot of the attention, but you know, the summer contact days, that's always a lot of debate about that. I saw that was narrowly rejected from going from 25 to 20, and I think the vote was 349 to 328. And they did agree to, the member schools agreed to push the start and finish of the spring baseball and softball seasons back a week. Any context or any reaction to those two proposals?
Well, I was surprised that the one on the summer contact days was that close of a vote. It was the closest vote we had, I believe, this time around. So it shows me that a lot of people seem to think that maybe less is more in the summertime, if that makes sense. You know, maybe we don't need 25 contact days anymore. Maybe 20 would be enough. But very close vote, and maybe if that makes it back to the ballot again in the next couple of years, maybe it'll swing the other way. The baseball-softball one is new to all of us, pushing the start and ending dates back a week. But keep in mind that our board sets the dates of the state finals. So just because the beginning of the baseball-softball season will be a week later next school year, it doesn't necessarily mean that the state finals will be a week later. That'll be a board decision to decide when that is. And some of that will depend on our contracts with the specific sites where we have the state finals and when those run out and when those expire and our time to renew. But I think the baseball-softball one will be good for schools. And you know how weather is in Illinois. You could have a nice 55-degree sunny day in late March and everybody's out playing ball. And then a week later, you've got 3 inches of snow on the ground in early April and nobody's out playing ball. So it's so unpredictable. But I think just bumping it back a week will provide a little extra cushion between the end of winter sports and the beginning of baseball, softball. It'll allow kids to maybe get some time away, some coaches some time away from the sports. It'll ease the gym crunch on schools that maybe their basketball teams are still playing in the postseason, and now they've started baseball, softball, and everybody's clamoring for practice time and batting cages and all that stuff that drives ADs crazy sometimes setting all that scheduling up. So I think an extra week of cushion there will, I think a lot of people will like that.
All right, and as we turn the calendar to the new year now, the IHSA then is going to be making the decision, is it sometime in 2020 on the basketball sites moving forward? Is that decision's made sometime in 2020, is that right?
Yes, I don't know the specific date or timeline for that, but you're exactly right, Jim. Sometime in early 2020, our board will sit down and look at the proposals we've gotten for basketball and decide where to award those state final sites for the next few years.
Yeah, then I know that'll be the next big topic getting attention after this district appeal vote results were announced this week. And again, you can review all the documentation with those bylaws, the whole process. You can go back and look at all the proposals that were out there and then that made the ballot and then the voting results, and that's the one great thing about the resources available at IHSA.org. You can peruse all that information. Sam Knox, happy holidays. I know we'll see you down the road.
Thanks, Jim. Yeah, happy holidays to you and all your listeners, and best wishes to all of our high school teams in the new year.
All right, always a lot to talk about with Sam Knox and the IHSA.